Hello, everyone. This is Robert Velasquez, podcasting for layoffpain.com. Today, we'll be talking about primary headaches. Medically known as cephalalgia, headaches represent one of the most common forms of pain experienced by humans. Cephalalgia comes from the Greek words kephale, means head, and algos, which means pain. Cephalalgia is defined as a painful sensation of varying intensity in the cranial vault, superior portion of the neck, and upper half of the face. Headaches are a very frequent symptom, as evidenced by their yearly top 10 on list of reasons for a neurological consult. The brain itself feels no pain. It's almost impossible to trigger pain from the cerebral stimulation, with the exception of cerebral trunk nuclei that are associated to epinephrine and serotonin production. The central nervous system structures that can feel pain are the dural venous sinuses, arteries of the dura mater, meninges, and extracerebral structures. They can develop locally as a primary symptom of a disease or as a secondary symptom of an underlying disease. Painful processes have above the tentorium of the cerebellum are projected by the trigeminal cranial nerve towards the frontoperiodo temporal zones, whereas pain originating in the infratentorial region irradiates towards the occipital zone, or the back of the head, via the glossopharyngeal and pneumogastric cranial nerves. Cephalalgia constitutes a spectrum of types and severity, but the two most common are migraines and tension headaches. While some people may experience milder versions of headaches, others experience severe debilitating pain unlike anything they have ever felt. Some patients talk about a sensation akin to their brains being sliced or stabbed, accompanied by a dreadful non-stop throbbing pain that can easily convince anyone their head is about to explode. These extremes are reflective of the complexity involved in any process, primary or secondary, that can induce cephalalgia. While one type of headache can be innocuous and not significant in any way, other types indicate the possibility of a severe underlying disease. Both chronic and recurring headaches can provoke pain and anguish, but seldom do they reflect a severe mental issue. However, any change in the pattern or nature of the headache could be a symptom of a major problem. For example, a sporadic pain pattern that changes to a frequent one, or if severity goes from mild to severe. For this reason, anything out of the ordinary should always be scrutinized and consulted with a medical professional. Causes. So, headaches are a common symptom of many underlying diseases. As such, it is of the utmost importance to perform an anamnesis and complete physical exploration of the patient to detect any severe causal disease. There are other specific causes related to the type of migraine the patient suffers from. For example, the cause of tension migraine pain is thought to originate from the hyperactivity of trigeminal nerve distribution areas, such as the cervical muscles. In the meantime, let's delve into factors that contribute to the appearance of headaches. One is inheritance. A great majority of patients who suffer from migraines have parents or siblings that also suffer from them. While the exact way in which it is passed on has not been completely established, a gene that transmits it has been identified. The gene is actually located in the first and 19th chromosomal pair in certain forms of migraine, for example, familial hemiplegic migraines. A second factor, a major factor, is age. At a young age, boys and girls present migraines at an even rate. From puberty onwards, the incidence of migraines in women shoots up dramatically, which is most likely as a consequence of hormonal changes unique to women. Then we have stress. Research has concluded that perceived stress was much higher in patients with chronic migraine than control subjects. Stress severely affects the quality of life of patients, as it was found to induce or provoke painful migrainous episodes. Migraines can be triggered independently from the type of stress and from the factors that cause said stress. Other factors are certain foods, for example, vanilla, dried fruits, chocolate, citric fruits, additives from junk food, sausages and fermented cheeses, just to name a few. Then we have hormonal changes. The incidence of migraines increases dramatically in women after the appearance of their first menstruation. Migraine pain tends to increase during ovulation, albeit in a low percentage of women, during menstruation and with birth control pills. Pregnancy can actually transiently improve migraines. Many women feel significantly better when menstruation disappears. Alcohol, regardless of the type. However, some drinks like red wine contain high levels of tannins, which can trigger migraine episodes with more frequency than other alcoholic drinks. Lack of sleep or excessive sleep. Insomnia can be an activator of some types of headaches, such as hypnic migraine, cluster headaches, and chronic paroxysmal hemicrania. All of these characteristically attack at nighttime. For those that like to take naps during the day, be forewarned that excessive sleep can negatively affect the quality and length of REM phase of sleep, making things worse. Medication: nitrites, vasodilators, triptans, MSG, birth control pills, and many more. Factors that promote chronification of headaches. The set of circumstances that makes headaches persist for longer than normal are divided into two major groups: non-modifiable factors, which are those that cannot be changed, and modifiable factors, those that can be changed. Let's talk about non-modifiable factors first. We have advanced age. Headaches are much more frequent in adults than children. Gender: women have a higher incidence of cephalalgia, especially those that went through menopause already. Race: Caucasian people are at higher risk. Genetic factors: a family history of headaches increases the likelihood of suffering from it. Low socioeconomic status: generally speaking, low income is a source of many issues and stressful situations that can induce migraines. Low education level: by not exercising the mind during the formative years, resolving different professional and personal aspects can turn difficult, which precipitates mental overexertion and can manifest with cephalalgia. Let's go through some modifiable factors. Some are, for example, anxiety, depression, and stress. Migraines are mostly due to arterial and venous spasming, but muscles in the neck and head can also cause it. Anxiety or stress tenses up muscles, and this tension can easily lead to headaches. However, anxiety and stress can be reduced through physical activities and relaxation techniques. Circadian rhythm disruptions. Research has shown that there is no specific type of sleep pattern at fault, but rather that bad sleeping habits, regardless of pattern, can cause migraines. The solution in this case is to sleep the recommended number of hours. Medication abuse. According to the International Headache Society, it is considered excessive to take 10 doses of pain medication a month for 3 months. Common examples are acetaminophen, aspirin, NSAIDs, butalbital, caffeine, and ergo-alkaloids. As a side note, caffeine does actually help to avoid migraines, while also facilitating the absorption of analgesics. However, it can create a dependence or interfere with sleep when consumed in excess. We have obesity, another modifiable factor. Different studies have proven that the risk of migraine increases by 27% in obese people, which showed an increasing parallel association between migraines and BMI. Besides favoring sporadic headaches, obesity causes a threefold increase in the likelihood of migraine chronification. If headache crises increase and appropriate measures to stop them are not taken, they will continue to occur ever more often. Therefore, treating symptoms early and aggressively is paramount to avoiding chronic migraines. Symptoms of cephalalgia is pretty self-explanatory. The main one is pain. Pain can affect the head in a general manner, or it can be confined to a focal point in the head. Intensity of the pain varies from moderate to severe, and it can become extremely incapacitating for the patient, and thus suspending all activity is common. The frequency of attacks is variable, oscillating between 1 to 5 times a month. The duration of a migraine crisis generally does not surpass 24 hours, though they can be relatively brief, 3 or 4 hours, or very long, like 3 days. Serious symptoms that require immediate consultation: eyesight alterations, tingling sensation in arms and legs, cutaneous eruptions, dizziness or vertigo when standing, neck rigidity, fever, anisocoria, which is where one pupil is larger than the other. Prevention. Here are a few recommendations to minimize or prevent cephalalgia from developing more than it should. Exercise regularly. Research led by Varkey, Sider, Carson, and Lind concluded that physical activity can be an excellent prophylactic approach to migraines, especially for those who rather refrain from taking medication. Among other things, this results in the production and release of feel-good neuropeptides, called endorphins, by the pituitary gland and by the pituitary gland, which is located in the central nervous system. Endorphins are our natural painkillers. They reduce stress and even help people sleep better at night. Exercising and in and of itself reduces stress by alleviating muscle tension. Improve your dietary habits by minimizing fats and increasing fruit and vegetable consumption. Keep in mind that fasting is not the idea. There's a big difference between eating right and eating too little. So watch out for that trap. Fasting causes us to release a stress hormone called cortisol. Okay, and that contributes to possible attacks. By improving your dietary habits, if we consider things like hypoglycemia, which is abnormally low blood sugar levels, hypoglycemia can also trigger migraines, which is why you shouldn't be fasting. It just means eat right. Okay, so hypoglycemia can also trigger migraines due to the simple fact that the brain is one of the most glucose-needy organs, along with muscles. Both depriving yourself of adequate nutrition and going overboard with sugars, sweets, and fats will certainly not prevent headaches. Rather, they will increase the likelihood of them occurring. Another good piece of advice for preventing headaches is to avoid alcohol consumption and tobacco. According to research conducted in Santander, Spain, by Dr. Pascual at the Marquis de Valdecia University Hospital, smoking begins to precipitate the appearance of cluster type migraines at 5 cigarettes per day. So at 5 cigarettes per day, that's when smoking really begins to have its effects, especially if you suffer from of cluster type of migraines. Alcohol is an inflammatory agent. Though its notoriety as a causal factor for headaches is probably exaggerated, alcohol is nonetheless considered a trigger for almost all types of primary migraines, including tension-type headaches, migraines with auras, and cluster migraines. It's thought that nociceptors of the meninges are activated by the inflammation/vasodilation mechanism that alcohol induces. If you suffer from depression, you should seek help, since it can be a trigger for pain or aggravator of headaches. Depression is also associated with anxiety and stress. And lastly, you should seek neurological counsel against any type of unexpected headache, especially after the age of 50. Types of primary cephalalgia. We can divide headaches into primary and secondary types. Primary headaches are those in which the headache itself is the one and only symptom and comprise around 70% of cases. Secondary cephalalgia, on the other hand, are those that are caused by another disease. So let's talk about migraines. Migraines are marked by repeated episodes of head pain whose etiology is considered to be mostly hereditary. Pain can be hemicranial or unilateral or generalized pain. It has been described as a throbbing sensation that is oftentimes accompanied by nausea and, on occasion, vomiting. Commonly, pain is triggered in relation to diverse stimuli, such as menstruation, stress, certain foods, medication, and physical overexertion, just to name a few. Pain usually gets worse with physical activity but can improve with rest. Typical symptoms include photophobia, which is extreme sensitivity to light, and phonophobia, which is sensitivity to noise. Moving on to tension headaches. Severity of attacks is better described as moderate, comprising roughly 75% of cases. It's the most common primary type of headache. Patients describe pain as persistent and located in the cervical, frontal, and occipital regions of the cranium. However, they seldom cause incapacitation, unlike migraines. Triggers are oftentimes associated with elevated use of analgesics, a common scenario given the current access of over-the-counter pain medication. While the exact cause of tension headaches is not clear, research indicates that it can be provoked by muscular or mental tension. Increased muscular sensitivity also heightens the tenderness of pericranial muscles due to the overstimulation of nociceptive receptors. Other factors associated with pericranial muscle tension are stress, anxiety, and depression. There's also a genetic component. If someone's immediate family has had frequent attacks of tension headaches, it drastically increases the subject's probabilities of eventually suffering from them as well. With an increased frequency of attacks, tension headaches can morph into a chronic situation. They can also originate from a central nervous system mechanism. When the central nervous system neurons are more sensitive than usual to stimulus, it's almost always interpreted as pain. Symptoms such as nausea and photophobia are seldomly present in these types. Let's talk about daily chronic cephalalgia. This one's characterized by an inordinately high frequency of episodes. Pain is present in 15 days or more in a 30-day period for at least 3 months. Each episode has a duration of more than 4 hours and an absence of a secondary cause. In the majority of cases, patients have previously presented migraines or tension headache. Oftentimes, this pain is associated with excessive consumption of some medications, affecting approximately 4% of the general population. While the pathophysiological mechanism is not yet fully understood, a study published in 2000 demonstrated that a low platelet serotonin content in patients with analgesic-induced migraines had an increased density of 5-HT2 receptors on platelet membranes. They also concluded that the systems affected by the chronic ingestion of simple analgesics can lead to the loss of efficiency of the same and produce a more extreme form of cephalalgia. Let's talk about cluster headaches. Modern science considers this as one of the most excruciating pains a human being can suffer. It's characterized by intense unilateral pain that is disseminated to trigeminal nerve distribution areas, including eyes and nose, which are accompanied by autonomic symptoms such as tearing, nasal secretion or nasal tamponade, and a reddening of the eyelids. Some studies have concluded it can be 2 or 3 times more common in men between the ages of 20 to 40 years. It tends to happen the same time of the year, and its intermittent painful stinging sensation is notorious for leading nightly episodes. Since pain can radiate to the nose, a differential diagnosis needs to be made to discard other conditions, for example, sinusitis. Many patients also present other diseases or psychiatric affectations, such as anxiety and depression. Moreover, cluster headaches have an enormous impact in the professional aspect of many patients, with just over 20% reporting having lost their jobs as a consequence of this pathology. Virtually all patients end up making major modifications to their lifestyle. Other primary cephalalgias. All right, let's mention a few more, rarer forms of primary cephalalgias. For example, exertional headaches, stabbing headaches, thunderclap headache, hypnic headache, cough headache, and new daily persistent headache. Diagnosis. Anamnesis will be evaluated based on the intensity and distribution of pain, along with its relation to posture, sleeping pattern, family history, current pharmaceutical regimen, and the results of the Valsalva maneuver. During anamnesis, key questions are crucial for a diagnosis. These include characteristics of pain, activity being performed at the onset of pain, intensity of cephalalgia, location, aggravating and alleviating factors, associated symptoms, and history. A patient's typical doctor's appointment only lasts about 15 minutes. In context with cephalalgia, using 14 of the 15 minutes spent understanding the clinical picture and history of the patient, a process called anamnesis, is the best approach in diagnosing headaches, since there are many potential causal variables. It's important to collect information systematically, since there are some cases in which the symptomatology can become blurred and difficult to sort into one diagnostic category versus another. To accomplish proper information gathering, successive consultations might be necessary in order to evaluate the evolution of the headache and provide a therapeutic response. Doctors will establish whether the headache is primary or secondary, where in more than 90% of cases, the type of headache is either migraine or tension headache. The entire clinical history should include socio-demographic attributes of the patient, such as gender, race, occupation, hobbies, etc. A physical exam is, of course, also a must. Anamnesis. Now, on his or her part, the patient should explain in detail the reason for consult, after which the professional's interrogation process should begin. What follows are extremely important questions the physician will ask as part of anamnesis. 1. Since when have you been experiencing headaches? This will allow an understanding and classification of the pattern of cephalalgia in order to determine whether it's acute, subacute, or chronic. Depending on the frequency, they can be classified as sporadic, episodic, or chronic. Migraines tend to make their debut during adolescence, whereas tension headaches usually begin right around the age of 20. Oftentimes, these patients self-medicate and only decide on visiting a doctor after an increase in frequency of headaches. Another question would be, in what areas of the head is your pain located? It should be established whether pain is distributed unilaterally or bilaterally, and anterior or posterior. The trigeminal nerve picks up sensitivity from the anterior portion of the cranium, the supratentorial intracranial structures, and the posterior intratentorial half. It has a sensitive component that can translate to cranial facial pain. Depending on its location, pain can be orbital, frontal orbital, glabellar, frontal, parietal, occipital, preauricular, or postauricular. Another important question is, what is the intensity of pain? The majority of patients describe it as very strong, but this subjective interpretation should be put in context of daily activities. In other words, does pain interrupt or lessen your daily activity? Within primary headaches, migraines and cluster headaches are the most debilitating. There are others, such as preorgasmic headaches and paroxysmal hemicrania, that can cripple patients as well, but these are very rare. Tension headaches do not really incapacitate an individual, but they do reduce performance. Question number 4. How would you describe the type of pain? Headache pain can be described as throbbing, intermittent, stabbing, dull, and pulsating. For example, tension headaches feel like pressure or tightness around the head, whereas intense pulsating pain usually indicates migraine. Note that these are indicators. They are not be-all and end-all for diagnosis. Question 5. How long does pain last? Headaches are classified with respect to pain lasting less or more than 4 hours. Migraines lasting between 4 and 72 hours, for example. Tension headaches and analgesic-induced cephalalgias tend to last minutes or hours, but they can also persist for days. Cluster headaches last between 15 minutes to 3 hours. Paroxystic hemicrania episodes are generally 2 to 30 minutes in duration, and neuralgia pain lasts for just an instant. After what time of the day does pain appear? Does pain attack in the mornings after waking up, like with migraines? Does it appear as the day passes, like with tension headaches? Or does it appear during regular nap schedules and in the middle of the night, like in cluster or hypnic headaches? Another important question, are there any accompanying symptoms besides pain? There are certain red flags that can appear that signal an impending attack. For example, fatigue, mood changes, nausea, food cravings, phonophobia, change in libido, or auras, those are very typical of migraines. Besides migraines, phonophobia can also be experienced by those with tension headaches. Cluster headaches can be accompanied by palpebral edema, droopy eyelids, reddening of the eye, and meiosis. The presence of vomiting or diarrhea appears in extremely severe episodes of migraine, although they can also be part of an underlying problem, such as acute hydrocephaly, thrombosis, or subarachnoid hemorrhage. Another question, what factors do you notice contribute to pain alleviation and which ones worsen it? Does the pain alleviate by applying cold to the forehead, like in the case of tension headaches or migraines? Does pain go away with a light walk, like in some sinusitis situations? Does pain get worse with cough and the Valsalva maneuver, like in endocranial hypertension? This helps identify the type of headache in play. For example, migraines get worse with physical activity, such as simply going up the stairs, whereas tension headaches don't worsen with exercise. And lastly, do you suffer from any disease? Okay, doctors are looking for underlying causes as well. Cancer, asthma, infections, and hypertension can provoke headaches, among many others. These questions are just some of the questions that physicians might ask. We can summarize the steps of diagnosis as anamnesis, okay, which is gathering data of clinical history and clinical picture, physical examination, and lab tests if necessary. During the clinical interview, physicians will take note of any observations of anxiety or depression, which is common in patients seeking counsel, especially the chronic forms of headache. People with a somatic personality are very sensitive to environmental adversity, and they tend to express psychological stress or frustration through physical maladies. For this reason, they should also be asked about the existence of family or labor conflict. They also present symptomatology of other systems associated with this trait, such as irritable bowel syndrome, back pain, dizziness, etc. A physical examination. The objective is to discard or confirm secondary headaches and to identify its causes. Right. So a physical exam will include vital signs, cardio evaluation and fundoscopy, palpitation of the head and face, and a complete neurological exam, which includes mental state, level of consciousness, cranial nerve tests, motor strength evaluation, the Babinski sign, signs of meningeal irritation, etc. As far as treatment, pharmacological treatment consists of antidepressants, beta blockers, and anti-inflammatory analgesics during the acute phase of pain. Most of these medications should not be taken for more than 2 days a week, otherwise it may actually cause chronification of pain. Relaxation techniques are another alternative for alleviating pain, as is a balanced diet. Other options that do not involve ingesting medication consist of following healthy habits, such as maintaining a regular sleep schedule, exercising, and avoiding alcohol and tobacco. A new drug, called Aimovig, made by Amgen and Novartis, is the first medicine designed to prevent migraines, which was approved by the Food and Drug Administration in May 2018, ushering in what many experts believe will be a new era in treatment for people who suffer the most severe forms of headaches. Prognosis. Even though it's generally believed that the brain is the organ affected with headaches or migraines, the truth is that cerebral tissue does not have nociceptors. In reality, the affected parts correspond to external structures of the brain, like the vascular trigeminal system, encephalic trunk, and the cerebral cortex. The majority of cephalalgias can be overcome with no issues. Treatments for primary headaches have demonstrated high efficacy and excellent recuperation. However, more complicated is determining expectations to secondary cephalalgias, since cures will be correlated to the underlying disease that provoked it. So when should you visit a doctor? The majority of headaches can be cured by taking analgesics without the need for medical prescription. However, if the headache is secondary, it's recommended to seek the advice of a neurologist so that they can determine the best way to handle it. In general, you should consider going to a doctor when pain is sudden and intense. Chronic pain has gotten worse with respect to previous episodes. Pain appears for the first time in older adults who never suffered from it before. Pain is interfering with healthy sleep patterns and causing the patient to wake up in the middle of the night. Pain is always felt on the same side of the head. Medication is no longer alleviating pain, or when pain impedes the functioning and performance of any daily activity like work or school. That's it for primary headaches. Again, this is Robert Velasquez podcasting for layoffpain.com. Until next time, thanks.